before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that you can follow Chat Cemetery on Instagram and Twitter at Chat Cemetery. There are links to those in the show notes. You can also support the show on Patreon, where I will be releasing bonus content for this show and my other podcast, Welcome to Geekdom. You can support for as little as a dollar a month to get access to all of that content. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Both are extremely helpful for the show. And now let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined once again by Becky Rice. This time we are talking about Stephen King's 2020 novella collection, If It Bleeds, which has a story of the same title, but we will get to that shortly. Becky, I have now read this twice because they sent me an ebook copy when it was coming out, and I barely remembered it by the time I read it again for this, which is weird because we were talking about this and we both like these stories, but I keep forgetting them.
Yeah. So you said that, and you consume a lot of content, like books, media, et cetera. And so when you mentioned that you had read it like a year ago when it came out and that you remembered the loose plot points, but not the details, I was like, you've read a lot between now and then, just reread it and you'll be fine. And then I read the first two stories a while ago, and then I went to read this other two, and I was like, no, I need to start all the way over. I need to read the first two again, because I also was having trouble recalling some of the details. And when I'm reading these stories, like in the moment, I'm like, wow, I really love these. But something about it lacks a lot of what I feel like other Stephen King books and short stories have, where like I think about them for a long time, like afterwards, which makes it where I can remember those details. A lot of these were, as soon as I finished it, I didn't really think about it that much afterwards. I agree. There's something about the staying power of Stephen King that these stories seem to lack.
Yeah, because I've largely really enjoyed his novella collections, and I still rated this pretty high. We'll get to that at the end of the episode, but like Different Seasons is probably one of my favorite collections from him, despite not loving The Breathing Method, which I think is the story of those four that most people don't enjoy quite as much as the others. But, you know, to dive in, and we'll just take this story by story, Mr. Harrigan's Phone felt like a nicer, more pleasant version of Apt Pupil. And that was kind of what it instantly reminded me of. And it has shades of Hearts in Atlantis, too, because you have this younger boy, you know, going and reading to this older man. So you have Mr. Harrigan, who is apparently much wealthier than he ever kind of lets on. And Craig is the boy who goes over and, you know, just does some small tasks and reads to him and things like that. And you don't know what it's going to become when you start this one. And I think that's why I remembered this one the most out of the four, because I was like, oh yes, okay, this has a little twist at the end that is a little more memorable, I would say, than the rest.
Yeah, especially because of like, it goes into so many details about like their relationship and their friendship. And I really especially loved when Craig wins the $3,000 from the scratch-off ticket. And I called them scratch-offs. I should have called them scratchers. I'm from New England. But he wins the $3,000 and he decides that he wants to buy like the phone for Mr. Harrigan. And his dad is like, no, like he's not going to like that. And even when he first gives it to him, he's very standoffish. And like, but Craig knows exactly like what to show him to get him hooked. And, you know, and it was very interesting, like reading that and listening to it, especially somebody who like had the first iPhone. And in hindsight, that seems like so long ago, right? Like for 12 years, we've had iPhones, 13 years. And so to like think about that, I'm like, oh yeah, like these were a lot of conversations we were having. And I think now, especially in hindsight, it's really funny to think about how back then, yeah, like you could open up like any news site and there were no real subscriptions for it yet. There weren't ads yet. And so some of the points that Mr. Harrigan makes where he's like, why are they just giving this away for free? What are they going to want from me later? In hindsight is very like funny to think about. And of course, this is written in hindsight. Yeah. But I really loved that. And it spent so much time in those parts that I was not entirely sure where the story was going to go until the funeral, when Craig like slips the phone into his pocket. I was like, okay, like this is, we know this Stephen King. This is supernatural, like things happening from like beyond the grave, like Stephen King. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah. So let's spoiler warning this here because I've
Oh
been
shit,
terrible
yeah.
at this, but I do want to talk about the twist. I feel like we haven't gone too deep into it, so we're good.
If you're listening to this episode and you've been listening to this podcast and you haven't read this collection of short stories, this is where you should stop and go read them. They're not, are they short? They are very long short stories.
They're
They
novellas.
are truly novellas, yeah. But you should go read them and then come back and hear what we have to say. But this is where you get off of the bus if you haven't read this yet.
Or if you don't
Sorry.
care, carry on. We're good
Oh
with
yeah, like
either.
if you're fine with having everything good about these stories ruined for you, then I guess can proceed to listen.
But the twist with this one is that, you said he slips the phone in the pocket at the funeral, at the wake, whatever it is, and he then calls the phone later, thinking it would have been disconnected. And, he just kind of wants to hear his voice one last time, which I think is a normal thing for a lot of people who have lost someone close to them. They're like, okay,
Yes.
just want to hear their voice one last time. And he doesn't expect anything to happen. Like, he's a smart kid. He's not completely going off the rails because he lost someone close to him. He's just going through the grieving process in a way that makes sense to him because of the connection they both had with this phone. So, he calls and he leaves a message complaining about this bully. And, we're like, okay, he's being a kid. He doesn't like this bully and whatnot. And then you get the twist and you're like, oh, okay, this is what we love about Stephen King stories. And when the bully commits suicide and then you have a drunk driver who commits suicide, you're like, okay, there's something bigger at play here.
Yes. So when he slips it into his jacket pocket, I was like, okay, cool. Like, we know kind of what's going to happen. Like, there's going to be something happening here. He's, communication from beyond the grave. And then when he calls and he's complaining about the bully, I like instantly knew. I was like, okay, something is going to happen to this kid. And so I was not surprised, but I think one of the fun things, and this is a criticism I have about these stories and a little bit about Stephen King in general. So some of this is on me, right? Because Stephen King definitely like a horror and fantasy writer. Fantasy is not necessarily my genre of choice. I'm a big like sci-fi person. And the reason for this, because I like the explanation of like how and why something happened. I like a twist, but like I'm okay with a predictable twist if there's explanation of like how and why it works. And a lot of Stephen King stories have that. Like the quote unquote twist is not actually meant to take you by surprise.
No.
It's meant to pique your curiosity, and then Stephen King like shows you slowly over time like where this came from and how this is able to happen. And we don't get that in this story. Months later, the phone still works, still connected. Craig calls, complains about the bully. Bully commits suicide. We know that it's clearly like Mr. Harrigan, and Craig is just trying to convince himself like there's no way that that's possible. And then years like he like doesn't he like he gets a different phone for himself. And when he does that, he's not able to contact him anymore. And that part really threw me because I was like, wait, the thing that makes this work shouldn't be Craig's phone. It's Mr. Harrigan's phone. Like, what does Craig changing his phone to a different model have anything?
I'm wondering if he started from scratch and just like ditched all his numbers, because it didn't seem like, as a kid anyway, he had all that many friends and phone numbers and stuff that would have been stored in his phone. So I was like, okay, so he got a new phone instead of just deleting the number. Like, that part was a little confusing too.
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't, is it that he's like, I'm going to lose this number? Or is it that he is something about him upgrading his? Because to me, I didn't take it as a, oh, now I don't have the phone number anymore. I took it as a, oh, I upgraded my phone and now this phone doesn't do that. I don't know.
So maybe it was like those two phones had a specific connection that allowed Craig to still contact Mr. Harrigan after the fact.
Which would make sense because years later, when it's the teacher or his former teacher that gets hit by like the drunk driver, when he decides that he wants to contact Mr. Harrigan again, It's not from his new phone. He goes and he finds his old phone and calls him, and it works.
Right.
So I guess it is a connection between those two phones, but that part does not make sense to me and kind of threw me a little bit, because at the end when he decides like, okay, yeah, like clearly these things are happening because of me, he like throws his old phone like into the lake or whatever. And supposedly that's like curing the problem. And I just feel like if this thing were really happening, right, like shouldn't it have more to do with Mr. Harrigan's phone than with the connection between the two phones? Shouldn't they still be able to contact each other regardless? And yeah. Yeah. The resolution and the explanation just like did not satisfy me. Which makes it sound like I really hated this story, but like as I was reading it, I was like, yeah, like I loved the way it was told. I loved the way the information got revealed. But walking away from it, I was like, okay, that's over.
I'm willing to forgive a lot because it's more about the character work than necessarily yes. like the plot and everything. I think King really excels at making us fall in love with characters. And Craig is a very hard character to not like, even though he starts piecing together that, oh, hey, these messages are causing this thing to happen, because the people they happen to aren't very good people. So
correct.
We still sympathize with Craig. And, you know, speaking of character work, I think the next story does this in a very interesting way, which is the life of Chuck. And I forgot this sort of goes backwards through his life. And I was just like,
that's a thing that I like in a story. So I really appreciated that in this one.
Yeah, because for me, the reason I took this on, one, I knew some of the older stuff that King wrote wasn't going to hold up. Like, I liked Thinner, but Thinner is not a great read in the 2020s, you know?
Thinner, great if you can just, like, squash the, like, thinky parts of your brain.
Yes.
Yeah, Thinner 100% did not age well by any means.
Yeah, and two, I knew that Stephen King progressed with the times. Sure, he writes characters that don't, which can be very hard to read because he's very much writing about small towns where things move at a slower pace. And, you know, with the life of Chuck, he just kind of proved to me that he's still trying new things. Like, if you look at his recent works, maybe starting with like 11/22/63, which isn't super recent,
it's
but
so good.
You know, he's doing alternate history stuff. He's doing crime stuff. He's not just doing horror, and he never has, but he keeps changing the way he does things and the types of stories he does. And that's really what the life of Chuck felt like for me.
Yes, I agree. When I was reading it, I very much was like, where is this going? What is the point of this? But then at the same time, I didn't care. Because I was cared so much about like learning more about like Chuck, right? And when it starts like getting into, ooh, also sorry, this is in the first part, right? Like in the third act, when the son is like asking the uncle, and he's like, "Why did God decide to take my dad?" And he's just like, "I don't have an answer for you." And I remember like reading that, and I was like, "Woof!" Like, you know, I mean, I think tons of people, if you've lost somebody, that's a feeling and a thought that you have where you're like, how, why? And yeah, I cared so much about these characters and this story that I guess the plot points didn't necessarily matter. I loved when Marty's talking to his ex-wife and she's like, are you taking your pills? Like, you know, I'm not trying to nag you. And he's like, yeah. And like, and he's like, you know, talking about how like it felt really nice that like, you know, she still cared enough to check in on him and stuff. I don't know. Like I loved that. But if you ask me the point of the story, I don't know that I can remember to tell you. Like,
it felt like a giant extended obituary to me.
Yes. Like, because when you get to the first act, like the third section, you've got Chuck's grandparents, when Chuck is young, telling him about the ghosts of people, but they see the ghosts of people before they die. and then Sarah actually does die. But trying to piece the three of those things together, did I miss something?
You know, one of the things that stood out to me the most from this story was Chuck dancing.
Yes.
And that whole section. And it felt like it did jump around a lot. But I think what it was Act One was sort of Chuck seeing his own death in the future, which I think is what kind of threw me about this one.
Mm-hmm. Because we had already seen it.
Yeah. And in like Act Two, it's like he's living a different life. It was very unique. I will give Stephen King that, but also kind of confusing. But I still liked it. And I, like you, I'm just like, I don't know. There was just something pleasant about this one.
Because it's not, there's nothing really spooky or like uncomfortable that happens in it, right? Like he scratches his hand on the fence. He gets this crescent-shaped scar on his hand. He does not necessarily tell everybody how and why he got this scar. And when he goes up, he does see himself dying, but he doesn't see how he dies or the cause of his death. All he really sees is himself. It's not even all of him, or maybe it is all of him, but like he sees himself lying in the bed, in the hospital bed, and he happens to notice the crescent-shaped scar on this old man's hand, and he knows that that's him. But he doesn't really know like how or why he's dying. He just knows that he dies in a hospital bed at the end of his life. And then that's the end of the story.
And he's also only 39 when he dies. And it's weird because like the billboard said 39 great years on it, right? And I was like, okay, is he retiring after having a job for 39 years? And like he dedicated 39 years to this company. But then I think at some point you do find out that he died from a brain tumor at 39. And Marty couldn't have been that old when that happened.
Yeah.
The timeline on this is very confusing because when we read Stephen King stuff, for the most part, we're dealing with much shorter timelines. You know, even within It, for instance, in 1958 and, you know, then the 80s timeline, it's still only a few day period or like a week period from each year, basically, mm-hmm. for a good majority of the story. But this, we're dealing with someone's entire life in a very incoherent timeline. So it felt like even though he went backwards through Chuck's life, it still felt like there were big pieces that we either didn't need to know or he just didn't want to put in there or something. But yeah, I was a little confused on like how old Marty was and then why he was recounting this so many years later, because in order for Marty to have an ex-wife, this had to have been like 10 to 20 years after the dad died.
Which is why the second act confuses me, right? So like, or are we wrong? No, Marty, wait, hold on.
This one really confused me, even though I enjoyed it. I will say that. It seems like we're not the only ones too. Like I was looking around on the internet, like preparing for this, and like people were posting on Reddit. They're like, am I just dumb or am I confused? And that's kind of how I feel right now.
Yeah, like I really enjoyed it when I was reading it and not thinking that much about it. But when I'm trying to think about it, I'm like, wait, because Marty's definitely a child when his dad dies, right?
Yeah, because his dad dies at 39. So let's say at most he's a teenager.
Is he 39? I thought.
Yeah, because I think that's why the billboard says 39 great years. I even read some reviews and they were like, this one isn't very coherent. So
yeah, but it's not just us. I don't feel like Marty's a teenager. I feel like he's like 9-ish maybe.
Which that could also make sense. I'm just saying like at most he might be a teenager if like Chuck had him in his early 20s, which happens, but probably closer to like 9-10.
Yeah. So Act 3 is in the present and Chuck is dying. And then Act 2 is in the future and Marty is like reflecting back and thinking about his father's death. And then Act 1 is in the past and it's Chuck as a child after his parents have just died when he was 7. Maybe Marty is supposed to be 7.
That could track as well.
Hmm.
I feel like I'm going to have to read this one again and actually think about it.
Yeah, I read it twice.
So did I. I mean, a year apart, but...
No, same. Like, or not a year, but like maybe like 6 months.
It seems to be the general consensus, though, that this one is the most confusing of the four stories
Yes.
here. And I think we can leave it at that, you know.
This story has big Lost energy where it's like, don't think too much about the plot. Just remember how you felt about the characters, and that is the important part here. And as listeners of your other podcast may know, I love Lost and I love characters, and I think that that is fine.
It works what it works, and we still like this, even though we're confused. But I think the next two stories are more straightforward because we have the title story, If It Bleeds Next, and this is a Holly Gibney story. So before we dive into what this one's about, have you read any of the other Holly Gibney appearances?
I've read Mr. Mercedes. I haven't read the other two books in that trilogy. Is this a thing outside of those three or just.
She's still like doing the private detective stuff in this, but it's not tied to the events of Mr. Mercedes or The Outsider. So this is clearly a character who Stephen King loves because he waited 40 years to bring back Danny Torrance, right? Even though a lot of people love Danny Torrance in The Shining. And, you know, since Mr. Mercedes released, he's put Holly in the entire trilogy, The Outsider, and now her own story. So that's a lot of appearances for one character in such a short time span, really, for King.
Because Mr. Mercedes was what, 2014, I believe is correct.
Something like that. I am so lost when it comes to the dates on these things because I read them so fast.
You've read a lot of books. Yeah, like that's not that long ago at this point. And those are multiple appearances from a character. But I remember like kind of like recognizing the name, and I was like, wait, is this, do I know who this is? And I was like, yeah, okay, I do. Is there anything that I would have missed or that would have been important in this with me not having read, like, I don't know, like The Outsider?
Honestly, I don't think so because Mr. Mercedes, End of Watch, Finders Keepers, that's not the correct order, but
I know what
that
you
is
meant.
called the Bill Hodges trilogy. So, you know, Holly is, I don't want to call her a side character in that because that's not how I feel about her character in those books. But the Mr. Mercedes book and then the following two have like a very specific thing that they are trying to accomplish. And in The Outsider, we get to see Holly operating outside of, you know, that set of books. And this story kind of continues that. So Finders Keepers is the name of the agency. So that's probably the only thing you haven't gotten to yet if you haven't read Finders Keepers. But otherwise, I think if you had already been introduced to Holly, you know her mannerisms. That's very clear from the start when King introduces her. And I really think that's the only thing you need in order to, you know, read this story. And school bombing, very touchy topic to say the least. I mean, we know that Rage has since gone out of publication because of the school shooter element to it. So I was actually surprised that King went back to something like this.
But I think some of it is that, like, that is a is an event that happens. It's not what the entire story is about, right? Like, 'cause the story is about like the reporter. Kind of, but like that's the thing. The thing that you're supposed to like take note of, right, is this like suspicious like reporter.
He's not trying to make you sympathize with the school bomber in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, like it's not an exploration of the psyche of this person who did this terrible thing. It's something different, and so I think that that's why that's able to be like revisited, even with similar content being kind of like, hey, let's put this away and let's not go back there. Because it's not just Holly, right? Like other people kind of start to be like, wait a second, like there's something about this person that just doesn't track, doesn't feel right. And then I feel like I should read or should have read The Outsider.
I think it's okay if you haven't. I do believe that it sort of, you know, gives Holly this independence that she doesn't necessarily have in the Bill Hodges trilogy. And I don't want to spoil anything for you, but, you know, this is very much Holly is working on her own for at least part of this. And I think you don't necessarily need the outsider for that. Maybe the rest of the trilogy would help a little, but I think once you're introduced to Holly, like I said, you kind of know her mannerisms and everything, but there are mm-hmm. things that do happen that kind of shape who Holly is by the time the outsider and the story come around. But I don't think they're like critical to understanding Holly.
Yeah, I think it's a very, like almost like some of the Marvel movies, not all of them, but some of them can stand alone quite well. And they're enhanced if you've seen the other ones, but
that's exactly
but even
it.
If you just consume it on its own, you're like, okay, like I know what's going on and I understand and I can follow this story. But I just feel like some of the stuff with like this supernatural being, I might have maybe like enjoyed a little bit better as somebody who had maybe consumed some of the other stuff, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I think it did a good enough job explaining like what she was like digging into,
yeah.
And why she found this to be like suspicious. That I felt like I understood what was going on well enough, but I guess it did make me want to go back and like read some of those other ones. So good job, Stephen King, if that's what you're trying to do. If you're trying to make me read three more books, you did it, because I think I will go back and pick those up.
I don't need any convincing, but I've already read them. So
you've already read those.
I don't need to go back.
You've already read all of those.
Yes. So this was kind of just a nice way to revisit the character, and you kind of see everything she's been through since first meeting her. And Holly is really a pretty great detective. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she just kind of sees things in a different way than most of us. And she isn't like Bill Hodges, where he's like the grumpy old retired police detective, you know, which is very much what he's like portrayed as in Mr. Mercedes. And she just brings this different element to the table because she is so different than a lot of King's other characters, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I don't know if this story had like too much that was memorable, other than it was, hey, we're getting to spend some time with this character that some of us have already spent time with if we have read, you know, the previous books.
Yeah, I would say this one was probably the most disappointing for me because it is the titular novella of this collection. And it's probably the one that I remember the fewest details about. Like, I remember the first part of it very clearly. But then when it starts getting into like, you know, she's like, oh, there's this guy like Dan. And he's also been like trying to figure out what's going on with this like weird supernatural thing. Is it called something? Do I sound like a dummy by just being like this supernatural thing?
That's how I describe a lot of things in King books. So,
okay, cool. Well, I'm like, is it called something? I don't know. And there's like 17 versions of this thing, but, and then there's someone's a hostage at some point, and then she pushes someone down an elevator and kills them.
Yeah. So Jerome and Barbara get involved.
Barbara.
And they're in the Bill Hodges trilogy as well. And Pete, who is one of the other detectives, I guess we'll say, in the Bill Hodges trilogy. I don't want to give anything away mm-hmm. on that front either. But
yeah,
these are all people Holly has built relationships with over, you know, the trilogy, and less so in The Outsider because she travels somewhere else for The Outsider story. And you have this guy who is just so determined to hurt Holly in any way possible because she knows his secret. And so yes. That's kind of how Jerome and Barbara get involved because, well, neither of them are very good at listening ever.
Yes.
And they like to get themselves in trouble. And, you know, they're both characters that I grew to really enjoy throughout reading the books, just because, again, King does a great job with character work and makes you enjoy the character. So I guess that would be the thing you're missing by not having finished the trilogy just yet. Less so the stuff with Holly and more so the stuff with Jerome and Barbara, actually, I would say.
Okay. Yeah. So these like side characters. Yeah. But so I'm trying to remember like how it ends, right? So like she pushes Chet down the elevator shaft, which kills him. And then
she goes down to clean up.
Oh yeah. In my brain, I was like, and then she goes and visits her uncle like immediately afterwards. So yeah, no, I definitely missed. You're right. That does happen. Okay. But I guess, I don't know. It's weird to me, right? Like she goes, she's talking to like her uncle who has like dementia, I believe. And he greets her as if like he's never had any dementia like at all. And there's supposed to be this like clear correlation between like the way that he greets her and the way that like Chet talks to her. But I'm like, that doesn't make any sense because people just say hello. Like it's not like he calls her something weird. Like he calls her Holly and he says hello. I don't know. Anyway, I just remember that being very weird. I was like, wait, is this supposed to, what's supposed to be the connection here? Like, is her uncle actually one of the iterations of this supernatural being that she's been around her whole life and just had no idea? Is that what that means?
It was weird because, we're getting dates as you read through the story. So most of this is happening in December of 2020, and then it jumps to February of 2021. So we have a little
Which,
time
like, none of this
that has
shit would have been
passed.
happening in February of 2021. Holly would have been like staying the fuck at home, like ordering Instacart.
But you have to remember, this came out in 2020. So.
I know. It's very funny to me to read these things that were happening in like 20. Oh, yeah, especially December of 2020. None of this would have been happening. Like, Holly would have been like ordering DoorDash, staying at home, minding her own business, ready to get her vaccine in 3 months, like not, yeah, get better at reading the future, Stephen King, if you're gonna write stories about the future.
How dare you write these stories and then release them during a pandemic and not predict the future? But yeah, the story literally ends with Hello, Holly, and that's just where it ends,
Yes, yeah,
which I
and so
kind of
that's
like.
what got like my brain, right? Is I'm like, okay, wait, so like he doesn't actually have dementia, or does he? Is this an iteration of the same supernatural thing? And if so, has it just like snuck into his body somehow, or has it always been him and he has secretly just been there her whole life?
Maybe he just doesn't like Charlotte and he was pretending.
Yeah. Oh,
Perfectly reasonable. I mean, who likes Charlotte?
But yeah, that one I think I really enjoyed, except for that part. Like, I didn't really understand. Maybe I'm dumb. At me. Somebody at me and explain to me this story, because maybe I'm dumb and maybe I would like it if someone explained it to me.
Honestly, reading some of these stories, I'm just like, am I not smart? Like, what's going on here? So I don't blame you because I've read almost everything that King has written at this point now. And some of it I'm just like, didn't get this one. And even though I think I get most of the story up until that point, it was almost like King did that epilogue thing where I'm just like, we didn't need this. It's like, you should have just left the story in December.
Yeah.
We would have been good. We didn't need February.
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool. Like these things happened. And so I feel like it means that like that last piece of it means something, and I just don't know what it is.
It could mean that he really wants to bring Holly back again, and he's leaving something there
Yeah.
for that to happen. And obviously, like I said, this character has now been in five different releases of his, so he clearly loves the character. And I think it wouldn't surprise me if we saw more of Holly Gibney, but I think of all of the Holly Gibney appearances, this probably wasn't my favorite. It might have been my least favorite of the five, just because I think the other stories are really good all around. And I still enjoyed it enough, except for that ending there, which I've talked about endings a lot. We don't need to talk too much about endings, but.
Deanna loves a Stephen King project until like the last act, and then she's like, no, thank you.
Yes. I mean, there are endings that I absolutely love. And then I'm just like, why did you epilogue this?
Just leave it alone.
Yeah, exactly. But we have one more story, which is called Rat. And.
Okay, so Deanna, this is a super unique setup, because in this story, Stephen King does something he's never done before, where he has a man go to a remote cabin to finish writing a project that he's working on. And this is something that Stephen King has never explored, has never thought about, has never set up. Never had a book that started that way, that later became like a giant film that people just absolutely loved and that Stephen King secretly hated and then publicly hated, and then wrote an entirely different book to kind of reclaim what the movie had done. If that were the case, this might feel like weird to revisit, but it's nothing he's ever talked about before. Especially, you know, if he had ever talked about that before, then I'm sure that things, they wouldn't have immediately gone like Rocky, like in this story, immediately just like shit hits the fan. You know, Drew gets like immediately sick. There's like a storm. He's having trouble focusing on his novel. Like I just, right? This is completely unique.
He had to do the monkey's paw version, Becky. He just really had to.
This is literally, it's like the monkey's paw shining. The shiny monkey paw is what this story is. That sounds like I hate it. I don't. But like, as I was like reading the first part of it, I was like, where have I heard this before? Like
everywhere.
Yeah. So there's a storm and then there's a rat in the sewer and then he goes to bed after he saves the rat. But then he wakes up and the rat is like talking to him. And I was like, okay, tell me more.
You know what? This is Monkey's Paw meets The Shining meets Stuart Little.
I love Stuart Little.
A conniving Stuart Little.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is a tricky bastard. This is not a good, wholesome boy like Stuart Little. Yeah. Because the rat's like, yo, I will help you finish your book that you're not able to finish. And so he's like, okay, yeah. And then the rat's like, okay, but before you say yeah, someone you love will die. And Drew's like, what? And he's like, what about your friend Al? And Drew wants to have a successful novel so fucking bad that he's like, yeah, F my friend. I don't know why I've been swearing and then just suddenly censored myself. I don't know what that was. But like, I'm just like, excuse me, my guy? Well, I guess it's fine because like, doesn't he like convince himself that like, he's like, this isn't real, you're dreaming. Just say yeah, and like see where this dream goes type of thing.
This rat is very, very conniving. And it kind of reminded me of 1922. Not that any of the rats in 1922 speak, but you know, you have the conniving man in that, which is sort of what the main character is kind of blaming everything on. And that rat very much feels like the conniving man part of Drew, even though it's an actual rat that he is seeing and apparently talking to. But it felt like a combination of that and like a little bit of Secret Window. Another writer in a cabin, shocking.
Yep.
And he just wanted to conjure up whatever reason he could to get this done. Like you said, he gets sick. His Suburban or whatever gets stuck and someone down the road has to like pull him out. And King does a very good job of being like, hey, this dude is isolated. Because even though there's someone like down the road, the fact that the road got that washed out and he had a Suburban that got that stuck or whatever, SUV,
that's pretty
whatever it
remote.
Was.
Yeah.
Because like, as you know, Becky, I don't live in a super populated area anymore, but we have roads that are paved and there are some roads that aren't paved, but they don't do that.
Yeah. Like it's close enough to civilization that's not happening, right? Like the roads aren't completely washing out. Yeah, both you and I have been in densely and not so densely populated places. So like when they're describing this, we're like, oh yeah, I know what kind of place that is. That's like out there. So yeah, like, I mean, I think it makes sense, right? It's like, okay, like maybe this is in his head. Maybe he's just like losing his mind. Maybe this is going to be a story about him unraveling. It's not going to be a story about a supernatural rat. And he finishes writing his novel, he gets home, Al is fine, and he's like, yeah, that was just a dream, it doesn't matter. But it's when his book goes for sale, and the publisher actually like picks it up, it's when he's celebrating his book getting picked up by a publisher that he finds out that Al has died. And so it's like, the rat got it, right? Like, it's like, oh no, it like, it lulls you into this like false sense of security where you're like, okay, like, this is going to be about something else. This is not about that. But like, he gets upset, even though he knows that he made the deal. And like, he goes back to the cabin to like, he's like, I'm going to go confront this rat.
The rat's just waiting for him. that whole time.
And that part is silly to me.
I remember not really loving this story the first time. I still don't love it, but there was something about it during the second read where I was like, okay, yes, King is doing the writer thing again, but he at least kept me interested in it enough because of how wild it was.
Until the end. And at the very end of the story, like, this guy just goes, well, I made a lot of money from selling my book, so I guess it worked out for me after all. And then that's the end. And I don't love that. Like, I feel like any other time when we have like longer King novels, when you have a similar character who is willing to make similar types of like bargains, you watch them have to deal with the consequences of it. And instead, his consequences are that he is upset for a day and then ultimately decides that it doesn't matter because he has all this money now and a successful career. I don't love that. This is definitely, I enjoyed all of those stories as I was reading them. And then in hindsight, I'm like, I don't like what happened in them. So if I were to rate this, I would say that during the process of reading, 4 out of 5 stars. In hindsight, thinking about the stories, 2, maybe a 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm not a person who loves rating things, which is probably why I give a bunch of things 3 out of 5. But, you know, it's one of those things where I rate it as soon as I finish it. And I'm in the moment of it, basically. Like, I talked about this on the episode, but I watched the Pet Sematary remake and I enjoyed it the first time.
Boo, bad. Why? How?
I watched it the second time and I was like, what was I on? Which the answer was nothing, but I think I was just excited to be seeing more Stephen King movies in theaters because it was like It Chapter 2, Pet Sematary, and I was like, no, that wasn't good. And that's kind of how I feel about some of this.
Yeah. You do a thing that's similar to what I do at like film festivals, where like when I see a film at a festival, I walk out of it and I almost always rate it like 1 star higher at minimum than I would have. Like, I walked out of Zola at Sundance and I was like, 5 stars out of 5 stars. This is cinema. And then when I rewatched it, I was like, I still give this 4 stars. Like, I still had like a great time and this was fun, but this was by no means like a 10 out of 10 film. I don't know what I was on. What I was on was that it was the first film of the day. It was Sundance, which is my favorite film festival. Like, and I think you do a similar thing when you read or see Stephen King works, where you're like, it instantly gets like an extra star in your mind because it's Stephen King. And then when you think about it afterwards, you're like, maybe not.
Yeah. And I think depending on the story, because these are shorter than like spending 8 hours on an entire novel, if not more, you know, I don't have as much time to sit with these while I'm reading them. Mm-hmm. And even though, you know, the collection as a whole takes a little bit to read, but it's like with each story, you're kind of like just hyped about it, especially when these things first come out. Like, I think I've definitely liked some things more than other people have just because I was excited that it was just existing. And then there are other things that I don't like that people like. Like, you and I have talked about the fact that I didn't like Sleeping Beauties, and you did. And I think,
yeah.
I do think that most of what I dislike is the generally disliked King work, like Tommyknocker's Cell, Dreamcatcher.
Because those are not good.
Yeah. And the one that surprised me the most, because I've been posting some of this stuff on TikTok, I said I didn't like the Bachman books, and apparently people love the Bachman books. And I'm just like, I didn't see that coming. Like, that's the one I dislike that I didn't see coming that a lot of people apparently love. Whereas Sleeping Beauty is very hit or miss. Like, the person I discussed it with didn't love it either. But it was just, the Bachman books really took me by surprise because people are like, that's my favorite King collection. I'm like,
no way. The favorite collection? What? No. Like, what? Because those are, I'm not super familiar, but those are, it's like four novellas?
It was when it came out because it had Rage in it. So it was like Rage, The Long Walk, Roadwork, and The Running Man.
Yeah, I just don't. TikTokers, who are you? At me. Like, I know. Like, if we're talking about, like, collections.
Becky's going to go stalk my comments now.
Yeah, I'm going to go find these people. Like, I would say Skeleton Crew Or maybe like Full Dark No Stars. If we're talking about collections, like those should be your favorites. Like one of those has The Mist. What are you talking about?
Yeah, and I mean, like, Different Seasons has Shawshank, The Body,
Yes.
Apt Pupil, and like I said, The Breathing Method is probably the least liked of the three, and Apt Pupil has its problem.
I think that one's supposed to be the best one. That one's supposed to be your favorite one, I guess. Right? Yeah, Different Seasons, that's the big one. I still think Skeleton Crew is probably mine, but that might just be specifically because of The Mist.
Yeah, my thing with these collections is I've loved the novella collections more because they're easier to digest than the short story collections. Because when you have 20 short stories, like my brain reading them straight through, it can't retain as much of the story because there's so many of them. So I think that's something that I've probably mentioned on here. That's kind of like my one regret with how I did the podcast because I covered by collection. It works with the novellas, I think, because like we've been talking for almost an hour-ish here about four stories, but I can't spend 4 hours talking about the short story collections to cover every single thing. So, you know, I mean, I could, I didn't want to.
Yeah, with a novella, I'm a big fan of novellas in general because it's short. You can read it in a single day, in a single sitting, and then put it away. But also, you can read it over the course of more than one day, and it doesn't feel like you're stretching it so far, and you get more than you would in like a short story. And it's not just a Stephen King thing. I like other novellas as well. Like I think
Yeah.
The Pearl is John Steinbeck's best work. I think the longer his books get, the worse they get, but you know. At me, I guess. I'm just picking fights with people today. Yeah, a novella is a type of literature that I'm a big fan of. And I just wish that these had stuck with me more. Like I think about, sorry, yeah, I'm just gonna keep going. I think about like reading The Mist or reading The Body or I cannot think of a different one. Oh, Shawshank. Duh, that's the one I should have led with. Even Big Driver, right? Like, and
Yeah.
all of those are stories that I thought about a lot after completing them because there was stuff to chew on.
And it's not necessarily that they make you feel good either. Like, Full Dark, No Stars is not a fun collection by any means. Big Driver is not a fun story.
No, all of those stories are like difficult, but there's a lot of substance there and there's a lot to chew on. Plot wise and character wise and like ethics wise. And that's the type of stuff that like when Stephen King does it, I'm just like, yeah, like give me those stories. Like, and these just felt like it felt like practice writing almost. Like he's practicing character development, he's practicing writing different types of stories, except for Rat, obviously, which is very similar to multiple things that he's done. I just, yeah, like I said, in the moment, very fun read, very good reads. If you're looking for something to read that you just want to enjoy it while you're in the moment of reading it, I absolutely like recommend this collection. If you're wanting to read something that's going to stick with you or will change you or that you're going to think about or have good, I mean, not saying that we haven't had good discussion about, right? But like, if we weren't recording this episode for this podcast, I doubt that you and I sitting down like for drinks or like for dinner that we would have talked for an hour about our thoughts about these stories. But whereas like some of these other collections we would have. So I would, if you're wanting something that's going to stick with you and that you can think about a lot, like I would skip this one and I would maybe pick up a different King collection. Also, if you're still listening to this, you've probably already read it. So it's too late for me to tell you that. Whoops. But it was a fun read. I didn't feel pained reading through it, not like Tommyknockers. Like I've read that one. I didn't enjoy it at all at any point, like while I was reading it or when it was done. But I can't stop reading something that I don't like. So I did keep reading it. But yeah. Also, I feel like my ability to talk about the novellas and the short stories that I do like redeemed my previous thing earlier, where I was like, I don't know that much about Stephen King as you do. That's not true. I don't know why I say things like that about myself. I do read a lot of his work.
Yeah, obviously I have as well, and I agree with you on the Tommyknockers. I can't even remember the names of the characters in the Tommyknockers. Like, that's how much I did not care for that story. And, you know, I think I might do some episodes on certain things like least favorite books, and, you know, kind of fill in the blanks down the line, since I am, at the time of you and I talking, I've read and watched everything for the podcast that is on the spreadsheet for the main episode. So it's been a long 3 years.
It has. And it's winding down a little bit. How you feeling?
I feel like I have a lot of editing to do because, okay, we're recording this on September 25th of 2021.
Surprise!
You are all hearing this at a later date. And at this moment in time, I have at least 10 to 13 episodes to record. So I have everything through January with two exceptions recorded at this point in time. So I still have two to record. One is scheduled, so that's already like on the calendar, and one I'm waiting to schedule. And I'm tired, Becky.
You have consumed a lot of content, and I think we've had this conversation before. I was like, oh, like, I wish you had done like a bi-weekly podcast so that like you had time to like digest things, or like even people who like consume media fast, like I would have loved to have kept up, but I would have wanted to revisit some of the, like I just being honest, as a friend and as a guest, a recurring guest, I only really listen to the episodes of the things that I've read.
Which I think is fine, because they're not going away. So like the episodes are just going to be there when...
I'm not going to read some of those.
No, that's fine. But I'm saying for like the people who have or are reading through everything, I didn't want to do a slower schedule and draw this out.
Well, then that would have been 6 years of your life at that point. And then, well, and he's still writing. People can still negotiate for like buying like the rights to make something into a film.
Yeah, this is by no means done.
Yeah, we are slowing down. Our cadence might shift. We might now have bi-weekly or monthly episodes like as we move into the future. But yeah, I think that if you had spaced it out, can you imagine if you had made this like a once a month podcast? It would have taken you 12 years.
That's why I went with the weekly schedule. And that's also why I threw in the adaptations, because I was like, okay, you know, I can't do the books weekly. That's not going to happen. I would have died doing that. So I was like, okay, I'll throw in, you know, like all of these adaptations. And that was kind of my break. It didn't necessarily feel like a break, but now I feel like I can put more time and thought into the episode. I don't want to say like I didn't put effort in, because I read everything and watched everything. But I think for me, like my one regret doing it weekly is that it was a lot to take in and try and process and also give thoughts on every single thing.
Yeah, it's a lot easier for your guests.
Yeah.
Right? Because I read a lot of books. What was I reading at the same time as this? Yeah, like the books I was reading at the same time as this or close to this were not similar. And I was able to fully like think and like process my thoughts because I wasn't on a deadline where I was like, okay, like, I have 2 weeks to read this like big chunk of book. And then I also have to be watching like this mini series in the week in between that.
Or at the same time.
So yeah, I'm excited to see like the future of Cat Cemetery.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the listeners too, hopefully you'll find this part interesting. I know we're going a little longer here on not the book or the collection, but for me, it was if I didn't give myself the deadlines, this would have never gotten done. Like, you know how I am, Becky. I like need things to like be consistent and be on a schedule. And if I hadn't done it this way, I just don't think it would have worked, because even if I did every other week, I probably would have been like, oh, well, it's okay if I don't keep up because it's only every other week, you know? So I had to have it be weekly. And then I think what the plan is right now is these next 3 months while I'm, you know, releasing the episodes that I've recorded, I'm going to focus on Patreon content. So anyone listening to this, there's a Patreon. $1 a month gets you all the comic book stuff, which Becky will be on one of those episodes at least as well.
I will be defending something that Deanna did not necessarily love, and that I liked a lot.
I'm hoping I like the comic more, though. Like, maybe the visual element will help my brain like it more.
We're not telling you what it is, but if you've been if you listen to this podcast, you might know and be able to pick up based on those clues.
Yes, and I have like some of the TV stuff. Like there were TV episodes that I didn't cover, like Creepshow episodes or Tales from the Dark Side, what have you.
I would love to come back for some of those.
We'll talk more after we're done recording. But yeah, like he has another book coming out in February, so I don't have that long of a break between episodes airing and the next thing. And I have the nonfiction books that I want to cover. Since the next book is a Gwendy book, I'm going to read the Richard Chismar book that King did not write with him, because I can't cover one and three and not cover two. My brain won't let me do that. So that'll be like
I agree. Yeah.
an extra thing that isn't written by King, but is in King's universe. And, you know, there's like extra stuff. Like I have this giant book on the It movies. I have shooting scripts. I have random books that other people wrote about King. So there's always stuff to talk about. And even though it seems like 2022 might be a slower year because the pandemic kind of pushed everything as far as adaptations go, it'll give me time to figure more of this out and like do different things. Like I said, least favorite books, top five books, what have you. I can play around with it a little more now.
Yeah, and I also think it'll be fun for as these new works, like new adaptations or new novels or new short stories are coming out, there will be like a timeliness to when you're able to like read them and then publish your episodes. And I think that that will be really fun to be like caught up, right? And like recording them and like posting them in like real time with as they're coming out. So I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, that is definitely the plan. I don't know who reads books as quickly as I do. Some people do, obviously.
I read through books pretty fast, but you,
I plowed through.
I feel it put me to shame. Yeah, like I'm a pretty quick reader. I read a lot. I usually, on average, read like 100 books a year.
I don't read that many, but to be fair, they've been Stephen King books.
Yeah, the books that you read are like twice as big as the books that I read. And you're also consuming other content, right? Like comics and shows and films. And I don't really watch a lot of TV. Books and movies are really like my.
Becky, I really want to become a movie person because it is way less consuming than 80 episodes of something.
Yeah, you watch at most 3 hours of something and you're like, cool, bye, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's gratifying at the end. It rules. I'm excited for the pace of the Stephen King stuff to slow down so that you can actually like watch the things that I've been recommending to you. You can finally catch up on those, and that rules for me.
You might need to remind me what some of those things are. I have a long list, but yeah, I'm so behind on other things. Like I never finished The Man in the High Castle. I never finished Narcos Mexico. Like I didn't finish so many things.
You don't have to finish those.
I have to. My brain has to. I'm in the middle of them.
I don't think you have to finish Narcos, but okay. I said that I'm watching The Sopranos right now. Like, and it's going to take me like 10 years to finish watching this show because I just watch television shows at such a slow speed. I need to be better about it.
Look, I got lost out of the way. I don't know how I did that while doing this.
I have no idea. Like, that floors me. I think about that a lot. Wow, this is a crossover episode. But yeah, I think about all the time about how Nick and Shane and I convinced you that it was a good idea for you to
And
watch
Richard.
all of Lost. Oh, and Richard.
He only showed up for one episode. It's fine.
That's true. That's true. In my defense, we convinced you to watch all of Lost one season per month.
I think we did two per month because I think I released them every other.
Oh yeah, we did. Which is wild to me because even us, the four of us, would rewatch some of it, but not always necessarily all of it. You know, we just relied on the fact that like we had seen some of these before. I think Shane actually did.
Shane did a good job with keeping up, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I rewatched most of it. Nick rewatched some of it. Richard rewatched none of it. And you were just like, "Yep, let's go." Like, I'm watching this. And I was just like, I don't understand how she's doing this. and reading all these books and watching all these miniseries.
I have a secret, Becky. I don't have a life.
I think you just don't sleep.
I do sleep. Well, I mostly sleep when I sleep.
You've been sleeping the last few days. You don't know, but like you haven't slept normal sleep in a while.
Yeah, I went to bed at 9 p.m. last night on a Friday.
I love that for you. I think I also went to bed at like 9 o'clock or like 8:30. I went to bed very early last evening.
I was tired, and it's one of those things where, well, one, I moved 2 years ago to a place where I don't know anyone.
I think that if you were going to do this podcast, that like the timing at which you did it and the other things that like aligned for you around that time, it was like perfect. I think if you had tried to do this a few years ago or a few years from now, it would have been like not good.
I would have had other things to do, which, the last year I've increasingly had more work, which is what made this increasingly more difficult to. I truly don't know how you all convinced me to watch Lost during this.
Yeah, same. I had a hard time like rewatching it working like 50 hours a week. And I don't have like a side project to podcasts. Like I, all I had to do, like if I didn't read the books I was reading outside of work, nothing was going to happen. I didn't owe anybody anything, but you like you had listeners to like produce content for. So yeah, definitely floored at your ability to do that. Is anybody still listening to us talk about the history of this podcast? I don't know. Maybe it's fun if you're a listener, to think back about the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'll be putting out like more stuff similar to this too as I go, because I like talking about this stuff. So hopefully people like listening to it. If you don't, let me know now before I do more of it.
Yeah, I definitely think thinking about the journey has been really cool.
Yeah. Well, Becky, thank you for joining me to talk about stories that we tried very hard to remember. We somewhat succeeded. I feel like at times I am not very good at this whole thing, but I think Stephen King maybe just wrote a lot.
Here's the thing with Stephen King, and it can be said of like anybody who produces a bunch of, right? Like Stephen King, Prince, David Bowie, right? When you create that much content, your slam dunks are like fucking slam dunks. Like when you knock it out of the park, you really fucking do it. But you're also gonna have some like misses in there. And it's not this you're bad or that you're inconsistent. It's that the thing that makes all three of those like artists like interesting to me is that they're willing to like try new things. And even when they're revisiting something that they've done before, they're putting a slightly different spin on it. They're exploring it in a slightly different way. And that's not always going to pan out, but I would rather read all these like Stephen King novels and watch him try new things, or explore new topics and not always succeed than to just read the same really good story five times. Like there's definitely writers out there that you know what you're going to get every single time.
And that's fine.
And that's fine. And sometimes it's also fun to be like, okay, this feels like Stephen King, but it doesn't feel like I know what's going to happen exactly. And so, yeah, like you take risks and sometimes they pan out and sometimes they don't, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I'm just now realizing I made a comment that I did give this a 4 out of 5 the first time around, but now that, like you said, we've talked about it and thought about it, probably more like a 3 for me, which isn't bad. It's a 3 again. I'm sorry. I'm actually not sorry.
Yeah.
Like, I looked at everything I've rated and I'm like, yes, there are 3s, but there's also a lot of 4s and there's also some 2s. He's written a lot, so there's a variety of ratings here, but I think this one, there's things to really enjoy about some of these stories, but then some very confusing things about these stories. And I think we'll leave it at that. So thank you again, Becky.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back.